Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Ladies and gentlemen, we witnessed a very sad moment last week. The Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper, passed away at the age of 61 years old. He is known for being such an amazing heel throughout his tenure in both Mid-South and NWA, and of course WWE, former Intercontinental Champion, and just one of the best promo cutters that we've ever witnessed in our entire lives. Just grabbing a mic, and as soon as he grabs the mic, it's on fire. He catchphrases, kick butt or chew bubble gum, I'm out of bubble gum. As soon as you have the answers, I change the questions. I was rowdy before rowdy was cool. You name it. One of the most honored, one of the most popular people ever in the wrestling business, 2005 Hall of Famer. He was the one and only. And sadly, we lost him last week. And so, ladies and gentlemen, these 10 seconds is well deserved for Rowdy, Rowdy Piper. He will be missed.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Derek, I understand he was 61 years old. I get it. But just like Dusty Rhodes being nearly 70 years old, it's still really, really tough to experience two legends in the business leaving us. I know it's death is inevitable. It's going to happen to everyone, but it's still tough to experience in our lifetime. Two legends passing along.
Oh, it definitely is. And honestly, Hot Rod is the embodiment of the classic heel. I mean, yeah, you could say Ric Flair is. But Hot Rod just got under your skin a little more that you liked it. You loved the joke, the prankster, but he was so diabolical and psychotic in a way. He just really, he's almost like the Joker. And he just really kept you on the edge of your seat. I mean, I've had his action figures growing up where you put your thumb in the back of them and then wrestle and him and Hogan. And, you know, just, oh, man, this was, you know, and Dusty Rhodes passing away is horrible. I mean, that's just bad. Putting Roddy Piper on top of that is just, I mean, it's almost, like, I'm sure you're more of a Dusty Rhodes guy than I am. I admire Piper. To me, he stood out a little more than Rhodes. Not saying that he was better than Rhodes, but just personal experience growing up, I had more exposure to Piper at times, and He was just, he was the perfect, always had a smile on his face, but it was such a crap-eating grin, if you want to call it. And it was just, never knew what was going to happen. And it's, again, it's sad. It's just been a horrible time for wrestling in the past, you know, month. And enough is enough. Give us a break already.
Yeah. And just finding out that Superfly Jimmy Snuka is diagnosed with stomach cancer and, ah, man, I hope he's not next. Shelby, hope that he recovers, and our thoughts and prayers are with Jimmy Superfly Snuka as he, you know, toughs out this really, really tough journey, you know, and really rough road of having cancer. And most of all, right now, our thoughts and prayers goes with the Toombs family. His, of course, many know his real name was Roderick Toombs. And so, yeah, it's tough. It's real tough. And we'll talk more about Piper later. Well deserved, amazing. So we'll devote some time at the end. The flavor of the week. We'll talk about his 1992 Intercontinental Championship win against the Mountie, WrestleMania 8 probably being his best match of his WWE career, in my opinion. And, of course, the Mid-South days when he was feuding. And, I mean, his heel work was amazing. I'm sorry, the Mid-Atlantic days when he was feuding against Ric Flair, who was the babyface. And, of course, Starrcade 83, the dog collar match, and going into the being a foe of the NWO toward the latter part of his career. So, well, there's a lot to talk about Roddy Piper, and we're definitely going to do that. I'm sorry, everyone. We are wrestling, Twitter, Facebook. I am so sorry. I apologize in advance that I'm going to have to turn this totally around. You know, I'm sorry. If you want to throw rocks at me, you do not throw rocks at a man with a machine gun. So try your best. So there's another Piper quote for you. But tough enough. Let's talk about tough enough. I've said this before, it's just getting ridiculous week after week after week. This show is getting more and more ridiculous. And I'm just ashamed watching this. This show is almost going, it's almost the worst tough enough that you could ever experience in your life. Not because, you know, not from the perspective of the winners, because it definitely seems like the popular vote is what it's all about, and ZZ and Sara Lee are the two most popular people according to the fans. I'm not even upset about that. I'm not upset about that at all. I'm upset about the horrible judging. I mean, and we'll talk about the Stone Cold podcast as well with Paige, but I just am so just annoyed and nauseated by The Miz. I mean, just and Paige even said this in our podcast, that in the Stone Cold's podcast, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But she said that, you know, The Miz is the one that's taking the heat, and absolutely he has, because first of all, why in the world would we talked about this last week, why in the world would the credentialing of you saving someone be because they're quote-unquote hot? That is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard in my life, of that being a credential of you saving someone. I mean, Leilani Kai wasn't necessarily hot. The Fabulous Moolah wasn't hot. Mae Young wasn't hot. And, you know, Bull Nakano certainly wasn't hot. Alundra Blaze, you know, there was an attraction to her, but she didn't, you know, she didn't forward herself, or she didn't market herself as some hot diva. I mean, she did when she was Medusa in the latter day in the 90s in the WCW, But a lot of, you know, a lot of hers and everybody else's career was basically wearing, you know, leotards, you know, the jumping bomb angels in the 80s. They weren't marketing themselves as, you know, being hot. I understand it's a new day, it's a new era, but at the same time, many of us are disgusted with what we're seeing. So I understand that, you know, the sex appeal and all that is key, is strong candidates and strong factors in someone getting some exposures in the WWE. I get it. I get the market that you're trying to make. I get the appeal that you're trying to draw. But it really seems as if The Miz just – do not, it just seems like he does not watch Tough Enough. I think even Paige called him out on that 1 week. But it just seems like he does not watch Tough Enough, because Amanda, she's okay. She's won a challenge or so, or came close. But at the same time, he should be ashamed of, one, saving Amanda last week at the expense of Mata, who was my, other than ZZ, from a charismatic standpoint, from a full package standpoint, Patrick and Mata were my favorites. And then this week, saying that he wants Amanda in the bottom three, and then at the last minute changing his mind at the expense of Chelsea. And Chelsea is the one who's the best wrestler out of all of them. She's an indie wrestler. So basically, in the past 3 weeks, this is a Tough Enough wrestling competition, and the two indie wrestlers that's a part of the cast, who were leaps and bounds above everyone else on all factors, the two indie wrestlers are the ones who get eliminated. And I'm not okay with the Gigi save on Paige's end either, because I understand that, you know, Gigi, she won a lot of challenges, she's great. But at the same time, you know, Paige is being a little bit hypocritical, because she's saying that she voted Patrick in the bottom three, who's leaps and bounds the best person on the cast, and then she saves Gigi because she feels as if she doesn't belong there. But Gigi got the lowest amount of votes at the end. So if she wasn't going to be saved, she would have been eliminated. So there's so much contradiction and just knee-jerk decisions and just repulsive, ridiculous decisions made in this show. And just The Miz and Paige are just the worst that you can have. And this show is just getting further and further in the tank to me.
The thing about Tough Enough is I watched the first two or three episodes, and then I kind of missed a tough one between, and then I watched it tonight, and it was boring. I didn't understand. I have yet to see them wear headgear when they're in the ring. You practice how you're going to play. And it makes them look like, I don't know. I mean, how do you learn to tuck your head if you're going to be wearing a helmet when you slam on your back shoulder blades? You can't do that. I mean, it just doesn't work. It looks too... shoulder pads, and, well, I guess a lot of people wear shoulder pads. But I'll get at the point that it's stupid. There is no reason for that. There's no reason for the drama. The Miz is boring. I understand they had to put in a filler replacement, but I think it was last week we were talking about other people that would be so much better than that. You need a veteran. You need a Simon Cowell on that roster, or on the panel. You need somebody who's seasoned, has experience. The Miz, give him all due respect, but he hasn't been in the game that long compared to, of course, they had to get rid of Hogan, but you could have put Jericho on there, put Jericho on the panel, and have somebody here. Let The Miz be the announcer, you know? It's just, there's so much you can do. It's total crap right now, and I'm totally boring.
Yeah. So far, the comment of the night, you can tweet at Crave Wrestling or join the We Are Wrestling live stream comment board at wawnation.com. Looks like I love interaction with listeners and fans of the show. And I've been doing this for the past few weeks now, and I think I'm going to keep it going because I love these comments. So far, the comment of the night is, Jim Herd must be booking Tough Enough. That is the comment of the night. And it's so apropos to exactly what's going on. This must be, Jim Herd must have some type of secret agent or secret consulting job like Vince Russo had in TNA not too long ago. It must be some type of secret consulting job that Herd has with Tough Enough in the WWE, because this has Herd written all over it. And it's so sad, and it's just ridiculous. I don't exactly know what this is what it seems like. This is what it seems like, we're not going to indulge ourselves too much longer with this crap. But it seems as if The Miz is getting some kind of some force-handed suggestions from the higher-ups to do something like, you know, make Amanda go far so people can kind of get used to her, or she can, you know, she would make more sense, you know, if she signs a contract, you know, people would understand because she went far. I'm kind of seeing that, you know, with Amanda. But I don't see no spot with Amanda. We already have an Amanda in the WWE. Her name is Dana Brooke. So we don't need a second Dana Brooke. And even with Dana Brooke, she's a bodybuilder. I understand that Amanda did fitness modeling and all that. But Dana Brooke is all we need, you know, as far as someone who has who's basically the Amanda type of look to her. So I'm totally against it. I don't think it makes any sense. And you can do away with Amanda. And, you know, Gigi's good, but, you know, Sarah Lee's trying, you know, she's working on her stuff, and I get it, and she's over. She's already popular. She has that AJ Lee, you know, type of look to her, you know, as far as, you know, her physique is concerned. She has that type of nerdy girl, every day. Great comment. We don't need a first Dana Brooke either. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. But yeah, it just doesn't make any sense for these saves to be at the expense of people who really, and Chelsea's promo was fantastic. I mean, her and Patrick had two of the best, you know, last minute promos of 30 seconds at the end of the show. And it just makes so much more sense to choose Chelsea because she was already on Raw. She had that, you know, that one appearance during the Daniel Bryan angle, and Brie Bella came out. So it makes sense, you know, for her to be there. I'm not a big Chelsea fan per se, but at the same time, she knows what she's doing. She's good at it. She has experience. She's worked in the indies. And so it's just ridiculous to me. It just makes no sense. I just get annoyed every time I watch Tough Enough. And one of the only reasons why I'm doing it now is because, you know, I said in the beginning, before Tough Enough came, that we're going to make it a feature on the show. That's one of the only reasons why I actually, you know, put up with the show, because of the people, because you guys and all the listeners are amazing. And, you know, even if it's ridiculous, it's worth talking about for the sake of a segment on the show. Speaking of segment on the show, let's talk about the podcast with Steve Austin and Paige. Now, okay, pros and cons. Let's start with the pros. I respect Paige for her family lineage. You know, the wrestling documentary that she was talking about, and Steve Austin was plugging. I watched that a while ago, probably a year or two ago. I watched all of it. I get it. I respect, you know, the family for their hustle and their grind and their passion of working in the business in the UK. And Paige was right. I saw the documentary, you know, a while ago, and I saw, you know, just the crowds that they were wrestling in front of. Like, they were really wrestling in front of very, very little crowds. So I respect that. I respect that in Paige. I respect the toughness. I respect the old school mentality that she has based on her parents being wrestlers. I get it. I respect it. And I did that. And I did even when she came in. I did research about Paige and understood that, you know, her family, she came from lineage of wrestlers, as she explained on the podcast. And that's why, you know, she's became successful in so little time, only being almost 23 years old. And so I understand it, and I respect that for what it is, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I respect the fact that you've been in the business for 10 years. I respect the fact that, you know, you've put some work in for that long, and you know, you get my utmost respect for that. But you're only 22 years old, almost 23 years old. I mean, you even said on the show, on the podcast, that you have a lot of work to do. And I've seen it, and I've watched hundreds and hundreds of hours of different documentaries and different shoot interviews and different, specials about people who are aspiring to be in the WWE, or just backstage stuff from NXT. Now, we see it all the time. We see it with, you know, Finn Balor having to start from scratch almost, having so much, you know, in the business, so much experience in the business in Ireland and in Japan. We see it with Hideo or Tommy. You know, he was, you know, GHC heavyweight champion as Kenta. You know, he was one of the best Japan stars, especially light heavyweight, but even when he ascended to heavyweight status, you know, Kenta was one of the best Japan wrestlers, you know, that there was before he went to the WWE. And, you know, and now he's Hideo Itami. So we've seen it. You know, Becky Lynch has the same story as Paige, because she's been wrestling, you know, ever since, you know, she's been wrestling for quite some time in Ireland. So it's like, I respect you, Paige. I respect your story, but your story isn't necessarily unique, because, you know, like all the people that I just named, and plus many, many more, they start from scratch. I mean, look at Xavier Woods. Xavier Woods has been wrestling in the business for almost 10 years now. You know, he wrestled in, you know, independent NWA territories. You know, he wrestled with TNA, you know, for a while when he was Consequences Creed and Austin Creed, teamed up with Jay Lethal, got released from TNA. Then he wrestled in Japan, and then he finally gets a, you know, WWE spot, you know, but he had many years of wrestling underneath his belt. So, again, you know, your story isn't necessarily unique. It's respectable, but it's not necessarily unique. And I just think that Paige was just, you know, I understand that they were compensating us for Hogan, but, I mean, that compensation left me wanting more, because it was just like a fangirl, you know, basically meeting, you know, her idol. You know, she was marking out the whole time, just about, you know, fiddling with her hair and just acting very, you know, I'm finally meeting my favorite wrestler, marking out the whole time. It was quite annoying. Like I said, I respected her stories, but they're not unique, and two, I just don't think it just left me wanting more. It just seemed like a regular podcast. Like if I'm thinking Stone Cold podcast, WWE Network, you know, Austin's already set the bar with Vince and Triple H and Paul Heyman. if you want to kind of stay in that bar, Hogan would have been a good choice. But if you want to still stay in that bar, you want a last-minute replacement for Hogan, why not choose the Big Show? The Big Show would have been a good choice. I mean, we don't want to see him wrestle, but I'm sure the Big Show, I mean, the Big Show has 20 years of stories. You know, how did you feel when he won the World Heavyweight Championship his first day of wrestling in 1995? How did he feel in 1999 when he, you know, came in attacking Steve Austin? There's so many questions that could have been asked to the Big Show that would have been much more compelling just to watch the Big Show and to see the Big Show be interviewed than Paige. William Regal would have been a fantastic interview. Arn Anderson would have been a good interview. Fit Finley would have been a good interview. Ric Flair would have been a good interview. Like, there's so many people that could have... Shawn Michaels would have been a good interview. There's so many people that could have been a better option than Paige. It just seemed like a Jericho podcast, you know, that comes on every week. It wasn't anything that stood out or was special to me at all.
It was boring. It was so boring. And even Steve Austin, you could tell he was like pulling teeth. I mean, he was halfway through it. I mean, he just seemed like he had to ask her twice, well, what do you think? Or, you know, what do you say? It was, again, giggling and all that. Again, she's 23. And she's talking about, well, back in the day, talking like 5 years ago. And that's not back in the day. And, I mean, it's Stone Cold has to be like, it's like I'm talking to a 6-year-old. You know what I mean? It's because in my heyday, you were probably still in diapers or in elementary school. Right. So it's got nothing to talk about. And you just brought up a great point. They could have brought anybody in there. Even, Shockmaster would have made a better interview than Paige. I respect the lineage. I did like that. That's great. But again, that only takes you so far because you're only 23 years old. You know, you've been wrestling since you were 15. Okay, well, when 13, you're not very, put together as far as, I can pull this off and do it. And coordinated, that's what I was looking for. You just, it's fun. But that doesn't, you're 23. That's all I got to say. And it was back in the day, 2011. I don't know what I was doing in 2011, but I wouldn't say that was back in the day. So anyway, it was a boring podcast. I'm sure Stone Cold's just as upset.
Yeah, they had an interesting meme going around, passing around. Be sure, you know, if you know what meme I'm talking about, you know, we are wrestling. WAWNation.com is the king of memes. Be sure, you know, to post that meme up if you know what I'm talking about. There's a meme of saying that this basically wraps up the podcast, and it was the GIF. I'm sorry, it was the GIF is what I'm referring to. The GIF was Paige like fiddling with her hair. And then it went to Austin, and it was that awkward moment towards the end where he just didn't say anything. He was just kind of staring in space because it just seems like he wasn't interested. But that was the best GIF that I've seen in quite some time. I just kept looking at it today, and it was absolutely hilarious. But, you know, great comment. You know, even Samoa Joe had to start over. And Samoa Joe, perfect example. He came in, he's basically in and out of NXT, does not have a prominent role at all. I mean, Sami Zayn had to start over. Kevin Owens had to start over. Cesaro had to start over. Like, all of these people who has legitimate long-term wrestling experience had to start over. So respectfully, Paige, your story is not unique as far as being in the business for 10 years. I just named like 10 people, you know, who was in the business for 10 years who did not reach the pinnacle of their division. You were 2-time Divas champion, 1-time NXT champion, and you reached the pinnacle of your career, and you really didn't have to start over. All these people who I mentioned had to start over. So, it's not unique. Again, there it is right there. There's the gif. Please, if you are paying attention, if you're viewing this somewhere else through any of the other media outlets, I'm going to plug wawnation.com right now, and I implore you to go over to wawnation.com and look at the gif that I'm referring to. It is absolutely hilarious. It is the podcast explained, all wrapped up. It's Paige getting giddy and making some type of running gesture and fiddling with her hair, and then goes to Steve Austin, and he's just dazed in space. And oh, just absolutely hilarious. That is the gif of the century right there. So yeah, I mean that was the podcast, and that was tough enough. So it was very, very interesting. So we get to Raw, and basically what Raw was all about was, I've said this before in previous shows, I'm not happy with the build to SummerSlam. Like, it's getting closer and closer to SummerSlam, 4-hour spectacle. And again, we still, other than Brock and Taker, there's only one official match for SummerSlam, which is absolutely ridiculous. So it's just a horrible way to lead us into SummerSlam. Very, very horrible. Typical opening with Seth Rollins. Wait a minute. What am I doing? I have not said a trivia question yet. What is going on? Trivia question of the night is, what titles were unified in Japan when Kurt Angle and Shinsuke Nakamura competed against each other? What titles were unified in Japan when Kurt Angle went against Shinsuke Nakamura? And the evolution of Shinsuke Nakamura is just absolutely amazing too. I on Access TV, we have here in the States, we're able to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling, and most of my New Japan, just about all of my New Japan viewing over the years was through the internet. And so it feels great to actually have New Japan on cable TV. Mind you, it's recaps of like matches from about a year ago, but at the same time, a year to a year and a half ago, but it's still good to view it and watch it. I enjoyed it. I watched the match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Bad Luck Fale for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. Fantastic match. And, you know, I saw the evolution of Bad Luck Fale when he was King Fale, and then Bad Luck Fale, you know, he's definitely evolved and he's doing great. You know, it was a great match. And then Nakamura, just, you know, his evolution, you know, from a young, you know, character back, you know, about a dozen years ago, and now he's this career, you know, big charismatic rock star in Japan. So Nakamura is the man. Nakamura versus Seth Rollins, that would be a fantastic match to see. Speaking of Seth Rollins, he opened up Raw. That's a big surprise. But he opened up Raw with a very, very funny shirt that's, you know, trying to one up John Cena, says never shuts up instead of never gives up, which is very funny. Of course, he cuts a promo. He challenges John Cena in a title versus title match at SummerSlam. Then he issues an open challenge for himself. Neville accepts. And I'll tell you what, man, Rollins and Neville, I definitely don't think Neville's there yet as far as just a main event star. But, man, that guy can go. I mean, I saw him I remember when he was much, much smaller. It was years and years ago, I watched an indie match between him and, when he was Pac, him and AJ Styles, and the match was just absolutely amazing. But he's gained so much muscle over the years, but he's still as agile as ever. And it was a perfect way to set up a Neville versus Rollins match. Expecting El Torito under 6 feet, under 200 pounds, Neville comes out. And as soon as he came out, I said, oh, yeah, this is going to be good. So, and it was. It was amazing. The only critique, and I know I get it, there was hardly nothing wrong with that match. But the only critique that I have is, again, it did not make Seth Rollins look strong at all. He basically had no offense in the entire match against, respectfully, a really, really, really good wrestler, but he's not main event level. He didn't have any offense against Neville out of anyone. There wasn't a back-and-forth match. Neville had some close calls, you know, Rollins rode out of some red arrows, and Neville had most of the offense the entire match. I mean, great match, you know, great match from a psychological standpoint, but, oh, man, it really made Rollins look weak again. And so I just, you know, it gets to the point now that even if he wins the match, which most likely is going to happen between him and Cena, which, again, why in the world are you just wasting an opportunity for someone else to be United States champion at SummerSlam? But even if he beats Cena and becomes the U.S. and world champion, that's still not going to help his world title reign. His world title reign was poorly booked. It made him look weak, and we saw it on Raw against Neville.
Yeah, we certainly did. And the thing that's going on with Seth Rollins, he's really good at being the guy that can just squeak away and just kind of walk away from the situation and go out not unscathed, but he still has the belt. He still wins by technicality. Or he's just able to keep the belt. I mean, that they've built that around him since, you know, WrestleMania. That's just what he does. That's his forte at the moment. And, I mean, this is, since the Shield, I mean, that's just his only thing to do, and that's his saving grace. Neville is, again, I totally agree with you. I mean, the match last night was absolutely phenomenal. It stole the show, but it made Rollins, again, just look like your typical Rollins, where he just squeaks by and just gets it, and I'll see you later, I'll get you next week, but I'm out here now, I'm going back to AAA so he can nestle me in his arms and tell me how great I am. So, I get that. John Cena going against Rollins, SummerSlam, it's your typical WWE playing a fail thing. They got to have John Cena in the main event. This is not even the main event, but they have to put him on the card. They don't need this match. But that's what it looks like it's going to be. And it could be a good match, but it could just be a typical one of the mill. John Cena, just as good as going against Randy Orton. You know, it's one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Nash, Mark Henry, these are all good choices. Yes, it was the IWGP title and the IGF third belt. So I'll give you IGF belt. So, you know, it was basically the third belt, IGF third belt that they were plugging, and the belt that Kurt Angle brought over to TNA Inoki's Federation and TNA had a little bit of a collab going on with the two. So, yeah, it was Angle versus Nakamura, and Nakamura won. It was a fantastic match a long, long, long time ago. Who played Oklahoma in WCW? Who portrayed Oklahoma and WCW? New Day and Ascension defeating Lucha Dragons, and yeah, there it is. Great picture there of Nakamura winning the IWGP belt, you were unifying both titles. Awesome. All right, so New Day and Ascension defeating Lucha Dragons and not Los Matadores. I'm wondering if I'm really wondering if they're doing some type of six-way match again, because Elimination Chamber worked. I guess a six-man match would possibly make sense again, with them being outside now. You know, they're not being caged up. They can do some high-flying moves outside. I guess a six-team match would make sense again, maybe a gauntlet or something like that at SummerSlam. I wouldn't be too opposed to that. And it also would give a chance for the New Day to be a part of the match and actually win the match, which there's no doubt in my mind that they should win the match and regain the titles. Just when you thought that the New Day was just not being interesting or going to die down, they just continued to be amazing, absolutely amazing. And the thing is that the way that they come out, Xavier Woods just talking smack the whole time outside, just those nuances are still keeping life in New Day. And so, I mean, they definitely are proving that they don't need the titles per se to be very interesting still, but they deserve to be champions. I mean, I was a fan of primetime players at one point in time, but at right now, no. It's just they're not as over as they used to be, and they're not a terrible. Them reforming was the best thing that the both of them could do, because they both were just floundering as singles competitors, just like the Dudley Boys were when they did the roster split. And we got Reverend Devon and basically Hardcore Bully, or Hardcore Bubba, Bubba Ray at that time. He was Hardcore Champion feuding with Raven at the time. And then we had Reverend Devon, who introduced Deacon Batista in 2002. So both of them, you know, them splitting was not a good idea. It didn't take them long at all to reform. And similar to primetime players, both of them were just floundering as singles competitors. It was absolutely horrible. So, yeah, it's a good idea to reform them. But, you know, they finally had an opportunity to say that they were tag team champions. You know, they've had it for a few months now. And, you know, they've been champs. They can say that at least. But it's definitely time for the New Day to gain those titles back again.
Well, and honestly, with the New Day, they've done so well with not having the belts but staying relevant, because everyone still loves it when they come out. So props to them. As far as them coming out and being with the Ascension, I mean, the Ascension just makes crap look that much worse when anyone comes out with them. Fun-time players, so yeah, they get their second win, they get their due, that's great. But yeah, the belts ultimately need to come back to the New Day, because again, they were awesome with the belts. Without the belts, they've been just as good. They've, as far as just having the crowd behind them and just having a presence about themselves, being entertainers and wrestlers at the same time. I mean, they keep fitting the bill. And so, of course, they need to get the belts back. But they've done an awesome, phenomenal job without having the belts and still, you know, making everybody look at them. That this is a team that needs to have the belts. And five-time players sit in commentary, that's great. But at the end of the day, the New Day is the better team. You and I both know it, and I think everybody out there knows it. And they've done so well to keep that promotion going.
Absolutely. Bryan Adams and Brian Clark. What was their team name? Bryan Adams and Brian Clark have the team name of what? And yes, Ed Ferrara is the correct answer. Bryan Adams and Brian Clark had the team name of what? Funny gif here of Xavier Woods. He just really seems comfortable in a heel role, and all three of them are doing a fantastic job as a heel. And it's good to see Kofi too. I mean, he's been babyface for so long, for all of his career actually, until the New Day. So I think he came in 07, if I'm not mistaken, 06 or 07, around the same time as CM Punk did. So yeah, from his debut in ECW till, you know, this year. So you're talking 8 years or so that he's been a babyface. And so yeah, it was time for a change, and you know, definitely worked out to their favor. So I'm sure we're going to get correct answers. Absolutely, that is the correct answer. Great job, Chronic. Awesome, Chronic. Chronic is the correct answer. Next, we have Charlotte and Becky Lynch defeating the Bellas. Good idea here. I just want Nikki Bella to drop the title, to be honest with you. I just wonder if they're trying to deliberately beat AJ's record with Nikki Bella. Like I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like never say never in the WWE a lot of times, because I just don't understand how they would do something like that. But at the same time, it would not surprise me if that actually happened. Not one bit if they do that just to spite CM Punk. Now, I've been, you know, this is episode 175, and just about every single episode, the past 3.5 years, I've been very anti-CM Punk, and I've been very vocal about that. But at the same time, man, I mean, just, why would you do that crap? That's ridiculous. Spiting CM Punk because, or AJ and CM Punk because they both decided to leave, and so they'll have Nikki Bella as champion. That's a break in the reign. This has been one of the most boring title reigns in recent history. At least when AJ and Paige were feuding against each other, it brought some life back to the Divas division, but before this Divas Revolution, Nikki Bella's reign as champ has been awful. And it just, she just needs to drop the title. She needs to drop it to somebody. Like I said, to me, Charlotte and Becky Lynch, to me, are the two. To me, with the Divas that are on the main roster right now, the two that stand out the most to me are Charlotte and Becky Lynch. There's just a Lita type of spark and spunkiness to Becky Lynch to me, and of course, you know, Charlotte with her lineage. And so, if as far as putting in on someone, I think a slow burn for Becky Lynch would be better, but Charlotte doesn't need a slow burn. You know, I'd be totally okay with Charlotte defeating Nikki Bella and becoming Divas champion.
And honestly, this past year, 2 years, 3 years, it's probably, I mean, honestly, any fan, is the lowest point in the Divas, the women's title division. The Bellas are boring, old, I can't stand them, I'm done with them. And it's, again, are they trying to fight CM Punk? He knows, who cares? That shouldn't matter. You've got bigger fish to fry. You've got women, a women's title that they call the Divas, that they need to really make something up, and it's so boring. I mean, it is, and we talk about it week in and week out, and just when something's about to happen, when it comes down to brass tacks, forget about it. The last couple of years have been garbage, it's been boring, it's been ridiculous. The Divas division has been nothing but overrun by the Bellas, and it's I'm tired of it. With this new Divas Revolution, we'll see what's going to happen with that. I mean, even like I said, Paige came in looking like a renegade, and now she's as fluffy as, you know, the Bellas. I don't see any fight that could really help them if they don't really harness and take hold of what they've got with Charlotte and just the new NXT crowd coming in, that they seem hungry. They're not posh. They're rough. They're rugged. Let's keep this going and let's see an end to this Divas era. And let's bring in the women's title back.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting that you said that because, one of the few interesting things, well, one of the few takeaways that I received from the podcast that was worth interest was Paige mentioning the bringing the woman's title back. At least that was interesting, at least. I don't know if she got a slap on the wrist by Vince McMahon at the end by doing that, but that's something I totally agree with. That butterfly title has to go. It's a ridiculous looking title. It just takes the prestige to me of this that away. So, next question: who was the first Smoky Mountain heavyweight champion? Who was the first Smoky Mountain heavyweight champion? Miss TV, we get Kevin Owens and Cesaro. I like this feud. I think it's great. I think it's a great mid-card feud. I just really wish that it was for the U.S. title. And great comment here. Whoever wins the world title is going to lose. Have Sheamus cash on them. It just makes perfect sense. Absolutely make perfect sense. The only thing is, it just really seems as if Cena's going to win. Just to have, because you want Sheamus to get. Sheamus cashing in on Rollins just wouldn't make any sense. However, you would have Rollins still being the United States champion if he wins. So, however, I really think that Seth Rollins just needs to hit the reset button. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, people think that I'm very critical, and people think that I'm very, I'm too critical of Seth Rollins' run. But it's like one of those things that I know his work. I watched Tyler Black grind. I've watched the grind of Tyler Black. I remember when he was with Jimmy Jacobs, the Age of the Fall in ROH. I remember when he was in the Indies losing to Awesome Kong, Amazing Kong in the Indies. And so, I remember those days when he was Tyler Black and he won the ROH, World Championship. So you're not talking to someone who doesn't know the history of Tyler Black. I've seen it. I've seen the grind that he's had over the years to make me respect him as a wrestler. I just think that the WWE is just they're mismanaging the ability that Seth Rollins has. I think that he's being poorly booked. I don't like him as a character. I don't like what they're doing with him, and I stick to it. Not because I'm just some flighty, fan who just found out about Seth Rollins. No, I've watched Tyler Black for a number of years now in the Indies and in ROH, and I know his potential to be a strong babyface and both a strong heel. He's been both. He was the man in ROH. He was a huge babyface in ROH towards the end of his career. So he has the ability. He has the potential to be way over. And I've said this many times before. He has the opportunity to have that Hardy 2.0 pop, is what I call it. Jeff Hardy for a point of time during his world title runs during in the WWE, he had that rock star style pop to him, and I think that Seth Rollins not only can can match that. I think that Seth Rollins actually has the potential to exceed that. I certainly see Seth Rollins being better than Jeff Hardy. I wasn't a big Jeff Hardy fan in the first place. I mean, definitely, I mean, I think that he was a world title contender. I mean, I'm not knocking his world title reigns. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been world champion, but I certainly think that Seth Rollins has the potential to be better and, you know, to match Jeff Hardy's success and be better from all of it. I mean, he's a better promo cutter than Jeff Hardy. You know, he has better psychology than Jeff Hardy. And, you know, he has better in-ring ability than Jeff Hardy. So he has that type of babyface potential to him. They're just mismanaging. They're just booking him so wrong. And I just really hope that they hit the reset button. There you go. Great picture. I absolutely love WAW Nation. Great picture there with Tyler Black with Jimmy Jacobs and Delirious. Yeah, it's just they're miss. Yeah, you're absolutely. They're mismanaging the ability Seth Rollins has. Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting that they are doing that because he's the world champion and they're still. It's absolutely ridiculous what they're doing. So he needs to hit the reset button. I hope that SummerSlam gives him the opportunity to do that. I don't know who's next in his feuding. I really don't know. But, you know, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if somehow they do some type of Randy Orton versus Sheamus match at Night of Champions for the title because Sheamus wins. They'll probably do some type of rematch between Cena and Seth Rollins for the U.S. champion. So they still probably, after SummerSlam, they won't try to reset his character, although they should. But at least for the rest of the year, unfortunately, they probably won't. And that's really sad. Absolutely, really, really, really sad. I don't think Jeff Hardy was ever a heel in WWE either. No, he was not. He was not a heel. I believe that the Hardys were heels in the very beginning, though, when they were with Michael Hayes, if I'm not mistaken. I think they had a very short heel run. But other than that, I don't recall Jeff Hardy ever being a heel. I know Matt Hardy was a heel twice, well, more like two or three times, when he did the V1, which was probably his best time in the WWE. And then when he turned on Hardy to lead to their match at SummerSlam, against when Hardy was going against Edge, I believe it was. And then the thing that he was going on with toward the latter part of his career when he's wearing tights and just got totally out of shape, man. It was just a really bad type of look that Matt Hardy was having, unfortunately. At least he's trying to get back in better shape, you know, now with in TNA, I'm seeing. And, you know, I've always, to be honest with you, I was always a bigger Matt Hardy fan than Jeff Hardy. I just was. And there's something about Matt Hardy I thought was better from a charismatic standpoint. And to be quite honest with you, I would be totally okay with Matt Hardy being TNA champion. I think that he's been in the business long enough to pay. I think he deserves it. I think that him being TNA champ, you know, wouldn't be too bad. Him and EC3 has a title match coming up tomorrow at their free pay-per-view No Surrender. So I know some spoilers that I'm not going to divulge, but I, as far as the women's championship is concerned. But I think Matt Hardy is a suitable main eventer. So let's see here. What trivia question? Let's see. What was the trivia question? Yeah, Brian Lee. Primetime Brian Lee. That's absolutely correct. Great job. And I think I said Brian Adams and Brian Clark. What were their team name? I don't think I saw that. Brian Adams and Brian Clark. What were their team name? I think I asked what were the team names? So I didn't see that yet. All right. I did. Chronic. That was the correct answer. I did see that. Chronic. And last week, I asked a question that I don't think nobody answered. I said, what was the event that Dino Bravo did his max bench press at? How much was it? And who spotted him? What was the event? How much was it? And who spotted him? But yeah, Kevin Owens and Cesaro, that's a, you know, I like it. Like I said, I was hoping that it would be for the U.S. title. It just made more sense. But, I mean, I would say probably the most improved wrestler, not from a wrestling standpoint, but from a push standpoint, would be Kevin Owens. Not Kevin Owens, but Cesaro. I definitely think that Cesaro is, you know, sad for Kevin Owens, but I really think that Cesaro cannot afford to lose a match. This guy is red hot right now, and he can't lose. He sadly for Kevin Owens, you know, this will be his fourth WWE pay-per-view or major event loss if he loses to Cesaro. But to be honest with you, Cesaro can't afford to lose. This guy is red hot. He's the most, to me, he's probably the hottest superstar in the WWE as far as rise is concerned, as far as ascension to main event status or just climbing up in status is concerned. Way over. He's just, you know, I remember when he first, I mean, I think he even said this in a house show before, as fact that he didn't like his theme song, but for some reason, his theme song fits him perfectly now. It's the same theme song that he had for quite some time, but it fits him perfectly now, and it just a no-nonsense character that they're building with him. He's really getting an opportunity to show his wrestling skills, which he, you know, he's showed it a bunch of times, but he really didn't have an opportunity to really show it from a upper mid card / main event level. And if you don't know about Cesaro, you have been missing out, and you are missing out, because this guy is amazing, and I absolutely love the fact that they're finally giving him an opportunity to shine.
Absolutely, finally. I mean, it's probably Tyson Kidd was the best thing, you know, getting injured to happen to Cesaro. Unfortunately, I hate to say that. Tyson Kidd has come back since. And, but as for Cesaro's personality and his statement with the WWE, he's absolutely red hot. And he came in looking like a Ryback or a Nathan Jones or something that, you know, he's something, but he's not at that level yet. Well, he's at that level now. WWE, take notice. And if Stone Cold even asked McMahon, you know, why isn't Cesaro over? I'm like, oh, I don't know. What kind of answer is that? Cesaro made himself over. He made it to where he is now. And he's done it for the past couple years, just always showing up, always being who he can be, and he has yet to really let you down on his own terms. No, WWE terms, okay, you're going to job to this person or that person, you're going to lose, you're going to tag you with this person or that. Now, on his own, Cesaro has just made the best thing, product that he can put out, and it's finally paying off. Is he going to be champion soon? Are they going to raise him to the main event? Well, that's up to corporation. But, or the authority. But as far as Cesaro goes, he can do that. He can make that. And they just have to have faith in him because everyone else is behind him. Everyone else has faith in this guy. Let the guy go. Let him be what he needs to be, what he can be. And I don't know what they would have against that.
Yep. Well said. Royal Rumble 88, 7:15, Jesse Ventura, bingo, great job. Who was on the babyface team when Hogan made his heel turn at Bash of the Beast 1996? Who was on the babyface team against the NWO? Well, they weren't the NWO at that time. They were called the Outsiders, but they weren't the NWO until Hogan initiating it and announcing it. This is the new world order of professional wrestling, brother. So, who was on the babyface team during that moment in time? Rusev defeating, yes, absolutely. Sting, Savage, Luger, absolutely. And I was just talking to a great friend of mine about this. They plotted that match was so perfectly booked. I loved everything about that match booked. And you know what made it so amazing is that Luger got injured, and a lot of people don't realize this. I've listened to many, many podcasts about this and been a part of many conversations about this and listened to conversations about this. A lot of people don't mention the fact that it was so amazingly booked because Luger was the one who got injured, so it ended up being 2-on-2, and it even brought in more of, oh, it can't be Hogan. Hogan's coming to save the day. You know, even when Bobby Heenan said, whose side is he on, you know, Dusty Rhodes and Tony Schiavone, you know, they were just, you know, dismissing that comment like, oh, you've always hated Hogan. You're basically, that was a idiotic statement. And it's just amazing how they put that dynamic in there that this can't be true. Why would you even say something like that? Luger, you know, got kayfabe injured to be sent to the back, so it was 2-on-2. So Hogan comes out to, you know, seemingly defend WCW, and just, oh man, Bash the Beast 1996, and it was so funny because that card as a whole wasn't that good. I remember Conan and Ric Flair went against each other for the U.S. title. That was it just wasn't a very good card overall. But just that it didn't need to be a good card overall because that is probably one of the top three most memorable pay-per-views of all time, really of all time. So it was such a perfectly timed, perfectly booked match, and every type of storytelling purpose. It was just absolutely amazing. But what wasn't amazing is Rusev defeating Mark Henry in such a squash match. And then they had the nerve to book and to highlight Mark Henry and the primetime players going against the New Day at SmackDown. Like, Mark Henry just got squashed, almost 20-year veteran, former world heavyweight champion, former European champion, former ECW champion, almost 20-year veteran. He comes in and he gets squashed basically by Rusev. Multiple kicks, at least on SmackDown last week, Jack Swagger was in his home state of Oklahoma, so at least he had an opportunity to kind of rebound and have that, you know, hometown pop of, you know, kind of winning the battle, so to speak, or kind of one-upping Rusev. But true, you know, Mark Henry wasn't in Selsby, Texas, but at the same time, it's like, are you just stripping Mark Henry for all of his dignity at this point? He's heel babyface, heel babyface, heel babyface. And then whether he's heel or babyface, he loses. And he's just being stripped away from his Hall of Fame status at this point. I think that Mark Henry is definitely a shoe-in Hall of Famer. I think he's been with the business in the WWE for almost 20 years. I mean, he well deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but I mean, come on. They are just doing a horrible job with protecting any part of a legacy that Mark Henry had developed in the past almost 20 years. And oh, it's just ridiculous to see him come out every week.
It's ridiculous. I don't want to see anymore. I mean, Mark Henry is at the bottom of the totem pole. And, I mean, that's a shame because of his veteran status. I mean, you don't treat veterans like that. I mean, the first thing they teach you when you're in go to wrestling school or anything is your veterans are everything. You do not disrespect them. WWE does that week in and week out. And it's a travesty. I just kind of wish Mark Henry just pull away and be done with it. Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, how can anybody rebound from the way he loses, as many times he loses? Same thing for the Big Show. So, just end it. Tell Mark Henry to walk out in the sunset or go join TNA because we have no business for here. And sadly, I hate to say that. Or just don't give him a wrestling role. If you're just going to treat him that way, it's like taking a beaten dog and just telling him to go run 5 miles. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm done with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, I think we have some time to address this question right quick. I know Scott Hall stayed away from his problems. Where do you think his career would be now? I still don't think that... Just real quick, I still don't think that he would have been a world champion. I think Scott Hall should have been at least a WCW champion sometime in his career. But to be honest with you, even more than that, he was way over as Razor Ramon. He was way over in the mid-90s, around 96, 95, 96. He was way over as Razor Ramon. And to be honest with you, I don't know why they didn't decide to make him world champion one time. Well, I'll say probably 94, 95, right before they came to the WWE, right before they came to the WCW in 96. So around 94, 95, especially 95, a big, huge year for Razor Ramon, way over. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, 95 was Diesel. Well, 94 was Diesel year, I believe, because I think Diesel and Mabel stunk up the place at SummerSlam 94, if I'm not mistaken, Derek. You can help me out on this. Or was it 95? They stunk up SummerSlam 95. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense for him to have, you know, the shaft at that point in time. I think that he should have won the world title in 94 and 95 because I think that he was way over at that time. So, yeah, sadly, but I think that he should have been – I think he should have been the top guy at least for a little bit in the WWE.
He could have been. He could have been a total top guy. But, again, like you kind of said, he didn't really need it because he was so over just being himself. He was too cool for the belt almost, kind of like how Piper was cool before cool as being cool or whatever.
He was rowdy before Rowdy was cool.
Yeah, that's the same thing with Razor Ramon. He didn't need that title prestige because just his personality alone just gets him over no matter what. And he just has that smart attitude that, you know, I'm better than anything. I'm better than that. I use coolness. So it's not that big of a shock to me he never won the title. He didn't really need more of the title. His name alone, which is very few and far between, your name does not need to be associated with the title because you were just that good. Like a Jake the Snake, you know. That's who you are, Razor Ramon. You're Scott Hall. Everyone knows the toothpick. You flick it in someone's face and hey, yo. Hey, yo.
Hey, yo. It's survey time. Yeah. 94 was Razor and Michaels. That's when they had their two ladder matches at both WrestleMania and SummerSlam. Isn't that, I mean, isn't that cool, though? They had a ladder match at WrestleMania and SummerSlam. That's amazing, man. That's really, really incredibly cool. But was it, let me see, because 95 was SummerSlam. SummerSlam 95, did they have it, or was it the... Was it the same year that they had the ladder match, or was it SummerSlam 95 that they had? I thought they had the ladder match the same twice in 1 year. I may be a little off as far as which year it was, but I thought the ladder match was the same
95.
Year. Was in SummerSlam 95 that they had this the ladder match, Michaels and Razor. I'm trying to figure out what was...
Watch it, so I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get the answer by someone who's listening real soon. But let's get to, real quick, before we get to Piper, let's get to Keith Barrett and Zack Ryder. That wasn't worth anything. Heyman and Lesnar promo, you know, is a good way to, to show some madness for Brock Lesnar while he was going back and forth with The Undertaker. And then Paige and Naomi, I mean, it just seems like that was just set up for the interview. And then, of course, Reigns, Ambrose, and Orton defeating Sheamus, Wyatt, and Harper. Wyatt taking the Sheamus taking the fall. I'd imagine it makes sense because, you know, it just seems like before people cash in the Money in the Bank, they go on some type of weird losing streak for some reason. We saw that with Daniel Bryan. We saw that with The Miz. We saw that with Dolph Ziggler. So yeah, they go on some weird streak. It was 95 because Razor and Diesel was for the Intercontinental Championship in 94, and then 95 was almost a year and a half later they had a second ladder match, Michaels and Razor. So yeah, that was great stuff right there. But yeah, it just seems as if they're going to, Sheamus is going to cash it in at SummerSlam. It seems like there's the big cash in moment. Daniel Bryan did it a couple years ago, so it makes sense, unfortunately. But at the same time, to me, Reigns and Ambrose against Wyatt and Harper does not seem like a marquee match. It just seems like, I said this before, I just think that they need another layer, you know, in that match. I understand if Sting doesn't come, I've gotten to the point where, Sting is going to be there that weekend for autograph signings. Why in the heck is he not going to be on this show? Why would you fly him to New York to sign autographs? That just doesn't make sense at all. That makes absolutely no sense to be there that weekend and not show up at the pay-per-view. But, he might do, I think probably the layer is probably him coming out probably at the end. It just seems like we'll get Reigns and Ambrose against Wyatt and Harper. Reigns and Ambrose might win, or there might be a disqualification because I think Rowan's just about good, just about clear. They've had some talks with Lee about Leo Kruger being a part of it. So whether Kruger or Rowan, either way, it doesn't matter. Sting does saves the day, does the vigilante thing at the end. I'd be okay with that. At least he makes an appearance. It's okay. If that leads to Sting versus Bray at Royal Rumble, or so, I think Sting versus Bray at Survivor Series would make sense. I'd be okay with that too. So I think that there's hope in possibly seeing Sting at SummerSlam.
You can see Sting at SummerSlam. It's not going to be, like an in-ring, match competition. But, I mean, maybe it's something, maybe he's going to have a match at his one-year anniversary. Yeah, I think it was Survivor Series last year is when he first came out and pointed to that at Triple H and all that. So it could be something like that. We'll see. I don't see him being that big thing in SummerSlam, or else they would have advertised him by now, but they don't need Sting for SummerSlam. So, we'll see where the dice lays, because 4 hours is a lot of time to fill for a wrestling pay-per-view.
Yeah. So, great point, mate, right quick. That was actually... That was actually, this would potentially be the third cash in at SummerSlam. Del Rio did it when Kevin Nash powerbombed CM Punk back in 2011. So, yeah, that's this could possibly be, so as from what it seems like every 2 years so far, they've cashed the Money in the Bank. Because Rollins won it last year and didn't cash until SummerSlam. WrestleMania, but Del Rio cashed it 2011 SummerSlam, and then Orton did it in 2013. So yeah, this could be another opportunity for Sheamus to do it. All right, let's talk about Piper for a little bit and wrap it up.
Is it now time for the flavor of the week?
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Oh, yes. Great call, Derek. It is time for the flavor of the week. Yeah, so Piper, man, I don't even know where to start. So we've got 5 minutes, so express discussion of Piper. Let's talk about... 92. I think 92 was one of his best years in the WWE. When he won, I remember I marked out. I only have a few markout moments that I can remember, like really big markout moments. And just my career as a wrestler, wrestling fan. Now, of course, I have like, you know, many markout moments, like, oh, that was amazing. But I remember when Kurt Hennig beat Ric Flair on the January episode of Raw in 1993. That there was a loser leaves WWE match. I marked out when Hennig beat Flair. That was an amazing match. Just recently, when Jericho came to the was the second entrant in the Royal Rumble a few years back. That was amazing. When Big E won the Intercontinental Championship. When Sting won the WCW World Heavyweight Championship from Ric Flair back in Great American Bash 1990. And there's a few more. And of course, when Ron Simmons beat Vader in August of 92, there's probably a few more, but those are my biggest markout moments that I can recall having. But yeah, Roddy Piper beating the Mountie in 92 for the Intercontinental Championship was one of those moments. I was, Piper as a babyface, as a heel, you know, words can't describe how amazing he was as a heel, but as a babyface, he was just as good because he still had that cocky, brash character to him. He didn't change, you know, he was still Rowdy Roddy Piper, you know, and it was amazing. Beats the Mountie for the Intercontinental Championship, you know, holds it for a few months and loses it to Bret Hart, and that match was absolutely amazing at WrestleMania 8. So there's so many memories that Roddy Piper has given us, and, you know, he's definitely one of the greatest ever.
He was the greatest ever. One of the greatest ever. And what I really remember is when he got behind Virgil, I think it was SummerSlam 91, around that time when the Million Dollar Man, I think it was at the Royal Rumble, Virgil finally, you know, decided to get away from Ted DiBiase, and Roddy Piper was behind him. He had a broken leg. He was on crutches. And for me, I don't know why. I just remember that a lot. Apart from that, with him and, you know, Hogan back in the day, there's something about Roddy Piper. I mean, WrestleMania 5, when he went up against was Piper's Pit, Morton Downey Jr. For all you old school people out there, remember Morton Downey Jr. as the precursor to Jerry Springer and all that stuff. I mean, he took a fire extinguisher to the guy's face, and you never knew what to expect of Piper, but it was always, You walked away, I mean, like you said, a total, you're such a mark. He had you in the palm of his hand, and you loved every second of it.
Yep.
Not many people can do that anymore. And the last mark-out moment I actually had was probably when The Rock beat John Cena at WrestleMania a couple years ago for me. But getting back to Roddy Piper, I mean, the guy himself was just, you didn't like him, but you loved him. He was just as big as Hogan was back in the day because Hogan never cleanly pinned him. And Piper just immersed himself in just making himself to be the biggest jerk. But you loved it because he made you laugh. It was funny. And it was you wanted to see Hogan just strangle the guy, Mr. T, whoever was involved. But he always got away in the end, and he always had that smile on his face.
Yeah.
The guy I don't know how else to explain it. It's just doggone it. It was such a huge loss for him to go, and it was so unexpected. I hope the WWE continues to honor him like they do Dusty, because it's just something that's honestly sad.
I totally agree. I think that, you know, they did a little, you know, tribute a couple times on Raw, but, you know, they need to put together something for him. I mean, there's so much footage that, you know, they have. I don't know if they have the Mid-Atlanta. I don't know if they have all the Crockett footage. I don't think that they do. It would be great if they had the Mid-Atlantic footage as well. I know they do have the NWA library, but I'm not sure if they have the Mid-Atlantic library. But, man, I just wish that they would have that Mid-Atlantic library to show Piper as, oh man, he was an amazing heel in Mid-Atlantic. Had the plaid, you know, trunks on, and of course the, you know, coconut with the snooker, you know, awesome. The Morton Downey Jr. segment, I believe that was WrestleMania 5, if I'm not mistaken, with the Morton Downey Jr. Real quick, this person who said that has a Tennessee Titans logo, and that's absolutely amazing. That's my favorite football team. So kudos to you.
Thanks,
but we digress. You know, it's absolutely amazing. You know, it says when Piper got to heaven, the angels paid the bagpipes for Roddy. You know. There you go, right there. I actually wrote an article at PWMania.com that said that was actually titled "Save a Bagpipe for Me, Roddy," and it talked about, you know, just my appreciation for Roddy Piper. PWMania.com. I'm a feature columnist there, so I wrote just on the featured item, I write columns for them. But also CraveWrestling@gmail.com, CraveWrestling on Twitter, @CraveWrestling, CraveWrestling Facebook page. Hey, if you want to donate to the show, PayPal @CraveWrestling@gmail.com. So, hey, we appreciate you. Fantastic episode. Roddy Whitey Piper, you'll be missed. We'll talk more Roddy. We'll always talk Roddy Piper because he's one of the all-time greats. And so, great interaction today. Fantastic job, everyone. I really, really enjoyed myself tonight, as I do every night. All right, SummerSlam is brewing up. Hopefully we get better Raws next coming. So much. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves Eden Elijah, and God bless.